Rodrigo's Lacey. That should be interesting. VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today, Andrew Smith tells us about one of the world's most powerful operating lasers. Brian Lynn presents this week's technology report. Andrew is back with Jill Robbins to present today's lesson of the day. Finally, we hear about tomorrow's everyday grammar from John Russell. But first,
engineer Antonia Toma works at a research center in Romania that holds one of the world's most powerful operating lasers. Recently, Toma studied the controls responsible for starting the laser. Ready? Signal sent. The engineer spoke to the French news agency about her work at the center near the capital, Bucharest. I will not lie. From time to time, things can get a little stressful, the 29-year-old said. But it's also very joyful to work here. And we are very happy that we have results as teams of international researchers come to the center, she added. European scientists hope the technology used in the laser will bring improvements to fields like health and space. The French company Thales operates the laser. The laser is so powerful because of technology that was awarded the 2018 Nobel Prize in Physics. Gerard Mourou of France and Donna Strickland of Canada were among three who shared the award that year. The Nobel Academy noted that improving laser technology offered new ways for deepening our knowledge about the world and shaping it. Mourou spent 30 years working in the United States. Then he went to Europe to complete the laser project. The effort began in the 2000s as part of the European Union's Extreme Light Infrastructure, or ELI, project. ELI is a research group with two other high-powered lasers, one in the Czech Republic and one in Hungary. The 79-year-old Mourou said the laser starts with a small amount of light with very little energy, but it is designed to amplify or increase its energy millions of times. Scientists have aimed to create more powerful lasers for many years. The devices fire extremely powerful beams of light, which can be used for medical, industrial, and military purposes. By the mid-1980s, however, scientists had reached a limit. They could not increase the power of the laser without destroying part of the system. Mourou and his then-student Strickland invented a technology called chirped pulse amplification, or CPA. They developed the technology at the University of Rochester in the American state of New York. CPA increases the laser's power while keeping the system safe. The method is complex. It works by stretching a short laser pulse with optical parts. Then, CPA uses special materials to amplify the pulse millions of times. Finally, the pulse is compressed so that it lasts for an extremely short period, as short as 1/1,000,000th of 1/1,000,000,000th of a second. Today, doctors use the same technology to correct people's eyesight with laser surgery. Maru said it could also be used in medicine to destroy cancer cells. Maru predicts that the 2000s will be the century of the laser. Additional scientific uses for CPA could include direct observation of the motion of atoms, reducing radioactivity of nuclear waste, and removing debris from space. Frank Liebreich is a managing director at Thales. He said it took hundreds of metric tons of equipment to build the laser in Romania at a cost of about $350 million. The EU helped pay for much of it. Thales said the laser is the largest investment ever made in scientific research in Romania. Countries including France, China, and the United States are also developing their own projects to build even more powerful lasers. I'm Andrew Smith.
Google has agreed to destroy billions of personal data records to settle a lawsuit that accused the company of secretly following users' internet activity. The lawsuit was considered a class action. This means the case was brought by an individual or small group, but with many others wanting to be part of the action. Lawyers first announced the settlement agreement in December, but details were not released until recently. The case covered millions of people who used Google's internet browser, Chrome, beginning June 1, 2016. Google is accused of continuing to follow Chrome users' internet activity even when they were browsing under a privacy setting called Incognito. Users accused Google of misleading them into believing their internet activity would not be recorded while they browsed in Incognito. The users argued Google's advertising system continued to collect data on users' web movements while Chrome was set to incognito. Google strongly fought the accusations. It had requested a dismissal of the case, but the request was denied. The settlement terms were negotiated over a 4-month period. The deal must still receive final approval from a federal judge during a hearing set for July 30th in Oakland, California. The settlement requires Google to destroy billions of personal records stored in its data centers. It also orders the company to provide more guidance about its privacy policies for people using Chrome. And it calls for tools to limit Google's collection of personal data. Individuals represented in the class action lawsuit will not receive any damages or other payments as part of the settlement. But the deal does not prevent individual users from pushing their own civil cases against the company in U.S. state courts. In a statement, Google said it was pleased to settle this lawsuit. Lawyers representing the Chrome users described the settlement as a major win for personal privacy in a world with ever-increasing levels of digital surveillance. Lawyers in the case valued the settlement at $4.75 billion to $7.8 billion. They explained they arrived at that number based mainly on what possible ad sales linked to the personal data collected might have earned without new restrictions. Austin Chambers is a lawyer who specializes in data privacy issues at Dorsey & Whitney. He told the Associated Press that he sees the settlement as a welcome development. He said it could affect the way personal information is collected online in the future. Chambers said, "This prevents companies from profiting off of that data and also requires them to undertake complex and costly data deletion efforts. Google still faces legal threats linked to other issues. Legal experts say those threats could end up having a much bigger effect on its advertising-based businesses. One of those cases argues that Google is abusing its influence in internet advertising to limit competition. Closing arguments are set to begin in that case on May 1st. Google is also facing possible changes to its App Store after an American jury found the store operates as an illegal monopoly. A hearing examining possible changes Google must make is set to begin in late May. I'm Brian Lynn.
Brian Lynn joins me now to talk more about his technology report. Thank you for being here, Brian.
Of course, Ashley. Thanks for having me.
This week's report dealt with a legal settlement requiring Google to destroy billions of personal data records. The case was linked to the company's Chrome browser and a privacy setting called Incognito. Has the settlement changed the way Incognito operates?
Yes, the settlement does require Google to make changes, but they are related more to the company's public declarations about its privacy and data collection policies rather than changes to the way its Chrome browser and Incognito works. The main complaint of users was that they felt misled by Google about the way Incognito operates and also about the kind of protection offered when someone uses a browser in private mode. But the way Incognito works is essentially the same as before.
So what does browsing in Incognito mode actually protect users from?
So, to be brief, the main purpose of Incognito is to make sure no data is saved to a user's device during browsing activity. At the end of a browsing session, meaning once an Incognito browser window is closed, no information about the sites visited is saved to the device. Also, no cookies or browsing history are saved on the device either. But Google does make clear, and always has, that even though this activity is not saved to the user's device, the web activity can still be seen, recorded, and even shared by websites, schools, employers, or internet service providers.
All right. Thanks again for joining me, Brian.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ashley.
Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
And my name is Jill Robbins.
And I'm Andrew Smith.
You're listening to the lesson of the day on the Learning English podcast. Welcome to the part of the show where we help you do more with our series, Let's Learn English. This series shows Anna Mateo in her work and life in Washington, D.C.
Let's jump right in with a short clip from lesson 20 of the series. We'll play the clip three times in a row. Listen to Anna ask a question and then make a statement. And listen for how she pronounces the small word, can.
Can you teach? You can be a teacher in a school. Can you teach? You can be a teacher in a school. Can you teach? You can be a teacher in a school.
There's a difference between how she pronounces the word can when she asks the question, can you teach? And how she pronounces it when she makes a statement. Listen one more time.
Can you teach? You can be a teacher in a school.
With her statement, you can be a teacher in a school, she says the word can a bit faster, and the vowel sound changes from a, like in apple, to the schwa, a. This change of vowel sound is something that happens when we talk faster.
That's a funny word, schwa, isn't it? When English speakers do not put any stress on a vowel, it sounds like this. We write it with the upside-down E.
Why do you think we have a special word for this sound, Jill?
I think we need a special word for it because it can be written using A, E, I, O, U, or Y in words. It is the most common vowel sound in English because it represents unstressed vowels. Lesson 20 of Let's Learn English has a pronunciation practice video that explains this change of vowel sound. Let's listen. In slow speech, can sounds like can. In fast speech, it often sounds like can. Listen to Anna talking to Pete about being a teacher.
Can you teach? You can be a teacher in a school.
But now, let's listen to the negative forms of the verb can. These, of course, are the words cannot and can't.
Well, it might seem simple. We want you to know how and when native speakers use each form. When we want people to clearly understand that we are unable to do something, we sometimes use the longer form cannot.
For example, when you talk on the phone and you have to explain a problem, you want to be sure that the other person understands you. So you might choose to use the form cannot. For example, if you are locked out of a room or locked out of a building, you might say, I've tried the key over and over and I cannot open the door.
Yeah, cannot gives emphasis to the meaning. As we explained in a previous lesson of the day, emphasis is spelled E-M-P-H-A-S-I-S. It means extra importance and is similar to the word stress.
Another reason we might choose to say cannot when speaking on the phone is because there is only a small difference in pronunciation between the positive form can and the negative form can't. Sometimes you can hear the letter T when we say can't, but other times it is harder to hear, and it just sounds like this, can't. In American English, we call that a held T. Instead of pronouncing the T, your tongue just comes to a stop against the hard part of the roof of your mouth just behind the upper front teeth.
Maybe we'd better say that location one more time.
Good idea. I'll repeat that. The tongue comes to a stop against the hard part of the roof of your mouth just behind the upper front teeth. In the pronunciation video of Lesson 20, you can hear Pete first pronounce can't with the letter T. And then the next time, you hear him pronounce it with the held T, can't. Let's listen.
No, I can't code. I can't teach. I can't cook. Anna, I can't do anything.
I noticed that when people send text messages, they often send a message saying I can, when I'm sure they mean I can't. I think that's because they're using their voice to write, or dictating, you know. The text and the phone software cannot tell the difference between the two words. How can we help our listeners hear and say the forms correctly?
Listen to these examples. I can, I can't. I can, I can't. When we say the positive form, we pronounce the letter N longer. The N sound, N, 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 lasts longer than in the negative form. In fact, in the negative form, because the tongue and voice stop, there is almost no sound of the letter N. Can't. So again, listen to the difference. I can, I can't. I can, I can't.
There is a difference, but it is small. If you cannot hear the difference, don't worry. Usually, you will know that it's the negative form just from the situation, from all the other information you get from the conversation.
And if you are speaking and want to be very clear, simply pronounce the letter T, like can't.
I'm Jill Robbins, and you're listening to the Lesson of the Day on the Learning English Podcast. Andrew, earlier in the lesson, you said you were going to give the listeners more examples.
That's right. We're going to give examples of how we pronounce the verb can when we speak quickly. Jill, you can just ask me a question, and I'll answer it.
That sounds pretty easy. Are you ready?
Ready.
Can you do it?
Yeah, I can do it.
Can you see it?
Yeah, I can see it.
Can you come over?
Yeah, I can come over.
Can you send it to me?
Yeah, I can send it to you.
Can you hear a difference?
Yeah, I can hear a difference.
Can you smell it?
I can smell it.
Can you put it in the oven?
I can put it in the oven.
Can you open the door?
I can open the door.
Can you give me a hand?
I can give you a hand.
Can you give me a minute?
I can give you a minute.
Can you give me all your money?
I don't think so. I cannot give you all of my money.
Just checking to see if you were really listening. What can you give me?
Good question. I can give you, I can give you free advice.
Advice? You mean you can give me suggestions for how to fix a problem?
Sure.
Well, I don't have any problems.
You don't have any problems?
Not today.
Well, lucky you. I think maybe you should give me advice. So, how about this? I can thank you for helping me and our listeners with the Learning English podcast.
It's the high point of my day. But I can't believe we spent the whole lesson talking about this one little word.
I can. Getting all the details of American pronunciation takes time, and people need lots of examples.
And there's much more our listeners can learn from Lesson 20 of Let's Learn English. In our next lesson of the day, we'll talk about an important topic from Lesson 20, having skills and knowing how to use them.
That is a great topic. I look forward to speaking with you about it. Until then, thanks for listening to the Lesson of the Day on the Learning English podcast. I'm Andrew Smith.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
Last month, VOA Learning English teacher John Russell presented an Everyday Grammar report that taught listeners how to describe their country's national dish. Many people wrote in with tasty descriptions. We got to read about famous foods from Brazil, China, Russia, Iran, and other places. On tomorrow's program, John will take a closer look at some of those submissions. He is here now to tell us a bit more about what we can expect. Hi, John. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Ashley. Thanks for having me on the show.
I got the chance to read through some of our listeners' national dish submissions. What will tomorrow's Everyday Grammar lesson involve?
Tomorrow's lesson will look at writing submissions from East Asia, Japan, and China in particular. We will learn about some tasty dishes. And we will also learn some important lessons about writing, grammar, and spelling and punctuation.
Do you plan on using submissions from people in other parts of the world for future lessons?
Absolutely. Next week, we hope to do a lesson based on submissions from several other countries. What will those countries be? Well, you will have to wait until next week to find out.
Thanks again for coming on the show today. I am already looking forward to tomorrow's Everyday Grammar.
Thank you, Ashley.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.